Jerry Pippin. Welcome to On the Record, and we have Jim Mars with us. Jim and I were talking off the air about the media and really how hopeless the situation is. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jerry. It's always good to be with you.
Let's explain to the audience today in our little conversation, a kind of a fireside chat in the spring, about the media, period. They pretty well control everything these days.
Well, I'm always trying to explain to people that we really do not have any news media anymore in this country. What we have are corporate advertising distribution systems. And there's actually about five or six giant multinational corporations that control everything we see and hear. And they are AOL, Time Warner, Disney, the News Corporation, that's Rupert Murdoch, Viacom, Bertelsmann of Frankfurt, Germany, and to an extent, Vivendi. And this bunch right there, they control everything we see and hear. And I'm not just talking about the news media. I'm talking about magazines, billboards, movies, DVDs, music, you name it. And that's tremendous control concentrated in just a handful of multinational corporations.
And, you know, and for a while it looked like the Internet was going to be a way to break free of that, but these corporations have moved into the Internet. I noticed where Universal and NBC Universal and Murdoch have formed a joint venture last week or week before, where they're going to have the mega entertainment channel on the web.
Right, and before long, everybody they have the money to make sure that operates quickly and efficiently and snappily. They have great graphics and everything else. The first thing you know, everybody will be watching that. And anybody outside of that that tries to tell some true story can be labeled a conspiracy theorist or somebody on the fringe. You know, this is the way it works. I'll give you a good example of how the government and media work hand in glove to stifle stories. And let's go back to March of 1997 when a giant object with lights along the side of it floated down through the state of Arizona and ended up that night over Phoenix.
Right, okay? The famous Phoenix Lights episode.
Phoenix Lights, okay. Now, my brother was living in Phoenix at the time, so I was aware of that when it happened. But most people were not. It was 3 months later, it was into June, before USA Today finally published a story on it, and then all the rest of the magpie journalists, they all, oh my gosh, a story. And then they jumped on it, and we finally got to hear about it. But what we got to hear was that something was over Phoenix, but it was explained away as military flares. Now, number one, anybody that knows anything about flares knows that they're on little parachutes and they bomb around in the air, and you're not going to have them lined up absolutely perfectly and then turning all at the same time. And yet everybody who saw this thing said that if these lights were steady and in line and turned with the object. But here's how the government took care of this, and it was pretty slick. The thing that appeared over Phoenix excuse me, and was seen by thousands of people occurred about 8:30 that night. After that, someone contacted the Maryland State Guard and ordered them to fly out to New Mexico, Arizona, and drop some flares over the Barry Goldwater gunnery range out there, which they did. And then, see, 3 months later, when it finally comes up, they're able to say, oh, well, it was just military flares. And, of course, the journalists who were under pressure of deadline and under pressure of corporate leadership and don't have the time or the inclination to really dig, that all they did was contact the Maryland State Guard. They said, yeah, we went out there and dropped some flares. So, hey, folks, that was it. It's just military flares. The problem was the flares weren't dropped till 10:30 that night. So we got a two-hour time difference there that nobody bothered to look at. And, of course, then the media is kept from reporting on it for several months until it's like, oh well, so what? And then it just kind of died away, except for those UFO researchers. Now, what's fascinating about that story is here just a couple weeks ago, the then governor of Arizona, Fife Symington, seen the thing, and he called it an alien spaceship. Okay? But yet it was the same Fife Symington who, after the news broke about the thing over Phoenix, held a news conference and said, by the way, we've caught the culprit, and brought out his aide dressed in an alien suit with a big alien head on it. And everybody laughed and laughed and acted like, oh, well, what a big joke. And so he did his part in discrediting the whole story. And yet now he's telling us that it was really true and it was an alien spaceship. And when CNN reporter asked him, well, why did you hold that news conference? He said, well, he thought that it was best to quell public panic and confusion. You know, well, you and I both know probably somebody told him to do that. And it all has to do with the embargo on UFO news that's been in place since early 50s.
You mentioned that somebody probably told him. That's the real big story behind that. Nobody in the media is doing that. They're not trying to find out who told him.
That's right. And that's the one question they should be asking. Who told you to do that?
I mean, you've had experiences with that from your first foray into the JFK assassination.
Exactly. And the key there is that it's not that they can keep all the information under the carpet. No, they can't. But if they can confuse the issue long enough, then it becomes an academic question rather than a revelation that would galvanize the public into action and demanding that something be done about it. That's what they don't want. And so just like the Kennedy assassination, it's taken us 40 years, but right now anyone who wants to know what really happened to Kennedy, the information is out there, books, videos, movies, you name it. And the national polls show that the vast majority, maybe up to 90% of the population now, believes that Kennedy was killed as a result of a conspiracy, and that this conspiracy involved people within the federal government of the United States of America. But 40 years later. So what? It's old news.
We talk about the media and the way they control things. It's not where they call a reporter in like you or me or somebody and say, Jim, don't cover those stories anymore. What they do is they kind of finesse it, you know? They say, well, do you think you really, you think people are interested in that? Do you think the advertisers are like that?
Well, it's a whole combination of things, beginning with the fact that a lot of journalists are just flat lazy, okay? They'd rather sit there and write a press release.
Well, in fact,
out and actually do less.
In fact, you know, I'm old enough, and so are you, that I remember when journalists really had to dig for stories. And the PR guy was the hack who worked around and was paid very little money. Today, it's just the opposite. The PR guys have huge offices and great staffs and huge salaries. And the media go... I know some news organizations that actually contact PR companies to get the video.
Right, exactly. And now you're understanding the corporate control over the news media. And I learned that early on. This is a, for instance, working for a newspaper for Texas, I'd go and scramble around and pull on all my sources in the city hall or whatever and say I come up with a story that the mayor is on the take, okay? Well, and it takes me a lot of work, a lot of effort to nail that down, get it past the legal people, get it past the editors. But it finally comes out in the paper. Well, over at the television station, they take the newspaper, rip the story out, rewrite it a little bit in script form, hand it to the news anchor who's making $100,000 a year, and he reads it, you know, and it's my story, and I'm making like $12,000.
Right,
so
right.
That's exactly the way it works, and it's not a whole lot different today other than, at least back then, the $12,000 a year reporters were out there really scrambling around trying to do things. Now, here's how they crippled that. The newspaper that I worked for more than a dozen years was an afternoon newspaper, and our staff numbered about 25 or 26 people, okay, to put out the evening edition of the newspaper. When the big corporation came in and bought the family-owned newspaper, they began to institute cost-cutting measures. And before long, that 26-person staff had been reduced to 11 people. So you had 11 people trying to do the work that had previously been done by 26. You can see that they would not have the time or the energy to really dig after stories.
Yeah, one of the little things in the broadcast business is the fact that for years the news departments were lost leaders. And then when the corporations, when you got down to this 5, 6, 7 corporations, as you talked about at the top of the show, all of a sudden they were demanding these news organizations, the news channels, pay for themselves. It's kind of like the Las Vegas syndrome, where at one time the showrooms were a lost leader. Now the showrooms are very expensive because they have to pay for themselves.
That's right. And let me tell you, I lived through the shift that took place on that, and here's what happened. Going back to about the time of the Kennedy assassination, the news departments of the major TV networks were all under public service, okay? And they just simply received funds, and they ran their news departments as good news departments. But apparently somewhere, somebody high up decided, you know, we need to get a little better control over the news media. So between the late 60s and through the 70s, it all shifted. And now the news departments of all the major networks and channels are under a vice president of programming. They became programming. And as a result, and then they found out that, you know, if you'll think about it, on any local channel and also the national networks, the highest priced advertising is during the news period, okay? Because during the, when they've got entertainment programming, some people like sitcoms, some people like drama, some people like soap opera. So you got your audience kind of split up, but everybody watches the news, okay? So all of a sudden the news, the cost for advertising during the news periods became the driving force behind these networks. And that's when the emphasis shifted from public service to programming, as well as from established, qualified, and educated journalists to air personalities. In England, see, here we call them news anchors. In England, they more correctly call them presenters. They're just presenters. They present what's put in front of them. And that's how you control the content of the news.
Yeah, there was the local news, for instance, scene. The technology made it possible for them to show off their toys, and to pay for those toys, they had a huge inventory of spots to sell, and ultimately it became the cash cow for each station, this news block, because they had to share the entertainment programming with the networks. They got very little of it themselves, a very small percentage according to the market size, and in addition to that, they had very few local avails, is what they call them, for local sale. And so I don't know if they figured this out or they just kept capitalizing on the event, you know what I mean? In other words,
I think it was a chase the buck.
Yeah.
What this led to was a shift from hard news to color stories, feature stories, because once it's under a officer of programming, he doesn't care what you're saying in the news. He doesn't care if you're announcing World War III is about to begin. He just cares, are we getting the numbers? And they found out that more people were likely to tune in for color stories,
right.
The 10-foot sunflower.
Yeah, like in your market, the Dallas-Fort Worth market, a top 10 market for sure. The saying, if it bleeds, it leads.
That's right. The crashes on the highway and the you know, police chases and stuff that really makes visual TV and draws viewers. But it's really not news because it doesn't really affect anybody that much.
You know,
what happened, and today, all you got to do is, whether it's the internet or a network, or you know, you just go watch a news program, and most of it is irrelevant stuff.
Well, in fact, you and I have had this discussion before about what is news. The definition evidently has changed. I always thought news I thought news was kind of what it, you know, what impacted you personally, and Nicole Smith's unfortunate death and battle over her body, it didn't impact me at all.
Not a bit. And what was it, was that newsworthy? Yeah, a little small story back on page 10, or maybe 30 seconds for a couple of nights, but not that huge media circus that we saw. And look at all was happening while we were diverted looking at Anna Nicole Smith. You know, meanwhile, the you know, we're about to attack Iran. We're bogged down in Iraq. We're bogged down in Afghanistan. The 9/11 issue won't go away and still has not been addressed by the major media, as you well know. I mean, you got all this important stuff going on that does impact us, and you don't get to hear about that.
So is it the people in government taking advantage of this syndrome, or has it been orchestrated? That's the question.
Yes. All of the above. But because, like I said, when you start talking about the media, then there's all kinds of pressures, monetary, sociological, everything else. For one thing, for example, in the mass media, whether it's broadcast or print, you'll find that the people involved in that tend to be middle-class Americans, okay? A lot of them have a college education, or at least some higher education, and they're among the best and the brightest, but they're very middle-class. And as a result, there is this kind of this unconscious desire to be the gatekeeper for the American matrix, you know, this matrix that we're woven into by watching TV or listening to the radio or reading the local newspaper every day. You get involved in this picture of reality and of this country and of what's happening in this country that is not necessarily true.
It's true, and you know, one of the things they always talk about, the liberal media.
Well, I say the media is just as liberal as their conservative corporate masters allow them to be.
Well, that's true.
And Jerry, I can prove this because, yes, you see stories about same-sex marriage. You see stories about gun control. You see stories that people can point to and say, well, that's a liberal viewpoint, which is probably true. But when do you see the big ongoing stories of corporate malfeasance and of corporate control and of the very things we're talking about right now? You don't see that. So the idea that the media is liberal is just laughable.
And you know, I wanted to point something else out. The tax issue alone, the people in the news business are the middle class, as you pointed out. They're the ones paying taxes. They're not allowed like the entertainment people, where they get a piece of the action and they get to invest and they have all kinds of tax dodges. They get a salary. And they get paid well, but guess what? Right. And so they are open to the idea that government is robbing them, and that's how the story gets out.
Right.
You know, I mean,
but you don't see it in the mass media. In fact, we used to laugh because just about this time every year we'd get assignments to write stories on taxes, and we'd go contact the IRS, and they give us the stories about how they're cracking down and how they're going to really go after tax fraud and people that aren't paying their taxes. And it happens just cyclically each year. And they all you hear is, oh, well, now, oh, and then there's the helpful articles about, you know, here's some of the new tax regulations, like, okay, maybe you can take a little advantage of this or that. But there's never any serious discussion about, why are we paying these taxes, and where's the law that says we have to pay these taxes?
You're right. The whole thing, in a nutshell, is that it's a combination of factors, I think, Jim. And one of those factors that we haven't discussed here is the quality of education.
Oh, don't get me started. the dumbing down of America is not just political rhetoric. We are just turning into, I mean, it's incredible. Somebody sent me one of these video things the other day where they had a guy from Australia or New Zealand, I think it was, out on the street asking people questions. And he asked them stuff like, what is the religion most practiced in Israel? nobody could answer. I said, what's the religion of Buddhist monks? And they'd say, Muslim? Baptist? No idea. And then he asked, he had a little map with him, and he said, what do you think we ought to do about Iran? And then he'd say, well, point out Iran. Nobody could do it. They didn't even know where it was.
There have been many, many examples of that, even surveys in shopping malls where half the people didn't know who the president was.
That's right. Oh, the one I love is that in Illinois, the home state of Senator Obama, they sent out a poll saying, what do you think we should do with Obama? And a huge glob of them, apparently thinking they meant Osama, said, well, they ought to catch him and hang him.
Well, some Republican operatives have used that name method anyway. They've tried to...
And which is how they manipulate the news media. Right now, all we can talk about is what are we going to do to get out of Iraq? And nobody seems to stop and remember why we get in. Because we were assured that Osama Hussein was going to build a nuclear bomb within 6 weeks, and that we had to get in there stopping it. All turned out to be just totally phony.
That's another problem, and I think the media is very guilty of this, and probably, in real criminal law, the people who enable criminals to do things are indicted as co-conspirators and as accomplices, and the media has been an accomplice, I think, all along on all of this false information.
I agree, because they will not take the time or trouble to look behind it, and yet that's what I was taught in journalism school. Look behind the official pronouncements, find out what's really going on, and they don't do that anymore.
No, in fact, they just get the handout and
run with it. Yeah. Now, then there's this. If Jerry Pippen says UFOs are real, then if that even gets mentioned in the mass media, they say, so says conspiracy theorist.
Yes. Well, they've used that term on Jim Mars quite a lot.
Oh, yeah. You know, no matter what I say, they'll add rights about UFOs. Like, that somehow disqualifies me from knowing anything else about anything else. And yet, if you've got somebody in the Bush administration that says... And this is actually happened, was the Pentagon announced that and brought in the reporters and showed all these weapons and said Iran is supplying weapons to the insurgents in Iraq. Well, number one, all of these weapons had English printed on them, made in the United States and Europe and other places. And then some astute reporter says, well, you could buy this stuff at any bazaar flea market over in the Middle East. Do you have any hard evidence that this is being supplied officially by the government of Iran? And they all started toe-tamping around and dancing. They couldn't really answer the question because, no, they don't. And yet the media will take something that's just absolutely untrue, like there are weapons of mass destruction hidden in Iraq, and they just run on the front page as if it's God's truth, and that's acceptable. But when somebody says something that... goes contrary to the official line, then it's some kind of theory. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, another thing, there are many reporters who have conflicts of interest due to their wives being in business with the government, the ones that are investigating or whatever.
Well, some of them have direct conflicts of interest. Let's not forget the guy that ran the homosexual website who was always in those...
Talking about Jack Gannon.
Yeah, Jack Gannon. And then there are pictures of President Bush hugging him and kissing him on the head. What's with that? The guy's not even a real journalist.
The press likes to jump on gay issues sometimes, but they never have on this particular issue. Jack Gannon's been pretty much under the radar screen, other than with people like you and me.
So see, and they still run some of his stuff. In fact, I wouldn't doubt that at some point he'll write a big book about his experiences and make millions, off of a big publishing contract.
I know. I've been, I have a background in the entertainment business, and, payola is pretty serious charges, but if you look at what some people in the news media do, they get payola.
Of course. Most of it's under the table, but it's still there nonetheless. Plus, but then on the other hand, you have somebody like myself who has a degree in journalism, who committed to journalism back in the early 60s, who is still a member of the Society of Professional Journalists, who have always, and I've been always scrupulous in trying to find truth and present the truth as best as I can find it, but I'm just a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, I know. What do you think? Are there any good reporters left? I don't necessarily need names. I can't think of any, but there may be.
I can think of maybe a handful that I could name, but let me say this. None of them are working in journalism, and none of them are working for an establishment media outlet at this point. They're all writing books or writing articles for alternative publications or whatever. No, I can't name you one credible journalist.
Most of these people that got in journalism, I think you'd agree with me, a true journalist is really a crusader. He believes in the mantle of truth.
Right. Well, that's what I committed to. When I joined what is now the Society of Professional Journalists back in the early 60s, that was, or mid-60s, that it was Sigma Delta Chi. It was a fraternity, okay, a journalism fraternity. Now, in the 70s, they opened it up to women, and they changed the name to Society of Professional Journalists. But in the 60s, it was still a fraternity, Jerry, I actually went through like this initiation type thing, and I'll never forget it. It was a big dark hall, and they had table stations, okay, with candles lit at each station, and you went from station to station, and they had some of the old journalists who had been in it for years and years sitting there, and they were reading from these scripts and stuff, but they were saying, you know, your job is to find the truth. Your job is to look behind the official pronouncements, yada, yada. Hey, I bought into it. I really thought that's what I was supposed to be doing. And the biggest shock I guess I ever got was that when I actually started working for big metropolitan newspapers, is I found out, and this was not a shock, that officials generally don't want to tell you the truth, okay? So you have to really work to get the truth. That wasn't a shock. But it was shocking then, because then I had to go and get it past my editors. And most of them were just, you know, they were so afraid of losing an advertiser or getting involved in a lawsuit, they didn't want to run anything. You had to fight with the editors.
Oh, in fact, those were the bigger battles.
Yeah, and then the real shock was you find that the public that you think you're trying to bring the truth to oftentimes doesn't want to hear it. Hey, don't tell me that stuff.
That's kind of what's happened with 9/11.
Exactly. Exactly. People it's much easier and safer to just embrace the official story, incomplete, inconsistent, non-supported as it is, than it is to really start considering what really happened.
Well, we're going to continue to work on our 9/11 series. It'll be unveiled here late in spring and summer, and you're going to be an important part of it. Because in your book, that was quite an interesting journey there. You, first of all, you got an okay to publish it, then they just let you keep the money.
Had a signed contract.
Yeah.
And this, what grimes me about that, over and above my personal interest in it, I mean, you know, you can imagine how hurtful it is to spend all your time writing a book under a contract with a major publisher, and then just at the last minute, for no real legitimate reason, they just decide they're going to suppress it. That's bad enough, but what really bothers me is the information in my book, The Terror Conspiracy, which really points out to what really happened once you see all of the information put together under one cover, that all of that could have been available to the public in 2002, prior to our invasion of Iraq. It might have caused a lot of people to rethink and not get stampeded into supporting that invasion, that war of aggression, and that's all it was. Iraq had never done anything to us.
Oh, I agree with you completely, and that's the reason I said earlier, I think the media, they're
culpable.
Yes, they are.
The victory's after the fact.
No doubt about it. What are you working on now? You got a couple of books, don't you?
Yeah, they're going to reissue my book called Psi Spies, PSI Spies. It's about the advent and creation of the Army's remote viewing unit and how they use this psychic ability to spy on the Russians and the Chinese and everybody else for that matter. And so I'm updating it a little bit and expanding it a little bit, and it's going to be published by New Page Publishers towards the end of this year. And I'm looking forward to that.
We could talk for hours about this, and we'll do it again, Jim.
This is a
subject close to your heart and my heart. We'll leave it at that. Thanks very much, Jim. Jim Mars on 9/11.
If we use the ability to electronically capture airplanes and fly them by remote control against the wishes of anybody on board, and if we crash those planes into your buildings and you got double indemnity and, you know, more money out of them than they're worth, and we could use that as an excuse, a provocation to start a war, hey, this would take care of everything.
Over the next few months, we are going to bring to the public the ugly face of what really happened on 9/11 and who is behind it.
Some senators have described this as a second Pearl Harbor.
There have been many excellent documentaries on 9/11. Many of these documentaries have uncovered much of the hidden secrets behind the story.
That had been planned for at least a year.
On our series, we're going to attempt to put a face on all of this. The people. Why they did it. Who did
it? We are not exactly sure at the moment of the whereabouts of the Secretary of Defense.
We will attempt to bring you the facts, plain and simple. Our 9/11 series will name the names. We'll tell you who did it. And we'll present the evidence to back up that story. 9/11, now on the Jerry Pippen Show.